There was a muttering in the crowd. Leela raised her voice. This is an issue of temporary leadership in the absence of Luke Garraway. No discussion of replacing Luke as leader will be had at this time. She clasped her hands behind her back. Please step forward, Bartholomew and Rufus. Bat stepped forward into the circle, and a moment later Rufus followed. Both were dressed unseasonably in jeans, t-shirt, and boots, their arms bare despite the chill air. The rules of the challenge are these, said Leela. Wolf must fight Wolf without weapons save the weapons of Tooth and Claw. Because it is a challenge for leadership, the fight will be a fight to the death, not to the blood. Whoever lives will be leader, and all other wolves will swear loyalty to him tonight. Do you understand? Bat nodded. He looked tense, his jaw set. Rufus was grinning all over, his arms swinging at his sides. He waved away Leela's words.
We all know how it works, kid.
Her lips compressed into a thin line. Then you may begin, she said, though as she moved back into the circle with the others, she muttered, Good luck, Bat, under her breath, just loudly enough for everyone to hear her. Rufus didn't seem bothered. He was still grinning, and the moment Leela stepped back into the circle with the pack, he lunged. Bat sidestepped him. Rufus was big and heavy. Bat was lighter and a shade faster. He spun sideways, just missing Rufus's claws, and came back with an uppercut that snapped Rufus's head back. He pressed his advantage quickly, raining down blows that sent the other wolf stumbling back. Rufus's feet dragged along the ground as a low growl began in the depths of his throat. His hands hung at his sides, his fingers clenched in. Bat swung again, landing a punch to Rufus's shoulder. Just as Rufus turned and slashed out with his left hand, his claws were fully extended, massive and gleaming in the moonlight. It was clear he had sharpened them somehow. Each one was like a razor, and they raked across Bat's chest, slicing open his shirt and his skin with it. Scarlet bloomed across Bat's ribcage. First blood, Leela called, and the wolves began to stamp slowly, each raising their left foot and bringing it down in a regular beat so that the ground seemed to echo like a drum. Rufus grinned again and advanced on Bat. Bat swung and hit him, landing another punch to the jaw that brought blood to Rufus's mouth. Rufus turned his head to the side and spit red onto the grass, and kept coming. Bat backed up, his claws were out now, his eyes gone flat and yellow. He growled and flung out a kick. Rufus grabbed his leg and twisted, sending Bat to the ground. He flung himself after Bat, but the other werewolf had already rolled away, and Rufus landed on the ground in a crouch. Bat staggered to his feet, but it was clear that he was losing blood. Blood had rolled down his chest and was soaking the waistband of his jeans, and his hands were wet with it. He slashed out with his claws. Rufus turned, taking the blow on his shoulder, four shallow cuts. With a snarl, he seized Bat's wrist and twisted. The sound of snapping bone was loud, and Bat gasped and pulled back. Rufus lunged. The weight of him bore Bat to the ground, slamming Bat's head hard against a tree root. Bat went limp. The other wolves were still pounding the earth with their feet. Some of them were openly weeping, but none moved forward as Rufus sat up on Bat, one hand pressing him flat to the grass, the other raised, the razors of his fingers gleaming. He moved in for the killing blow. Stop! Maya's voice rang out through the park. The other wolves looked up in shock. Rufus grinned. Hey, little girl, he said. Maya didn't move. She was in the middle of the circle. Somehow, she had pushed past the line of wolves without them noticing. She wore cords and a denim jacket, her hair pulled tightly back. Her expression was severe, almost blank. I want to issue a challenge, she said. Maya, Leela said, you know the law. When you fight with a wolf of the pack, you must fight him alone and afar. Lest others take part in the quarrel and the pack be diminished by war, you cannot interrupt the battle. Rufus is about to deliver the death blow, Maya said unemotionally. Do you really feel like I need to wait that 5 minutes before I issue my challenge? I will if Rufus is too scared to fight me with Bat still breathing. Rufus leaped off Bat's limp body with a roar and advanced on Maya. Leela's voice rose in panic. Maya, get out of there! Once there's first blood, we can't stop the fight! Rufus lunged at Maya. His claws tore the edge of her jacket. Maya dropped to her knees and rolled, then came up onto her knees, her claws extended. Her heart was slamming against her ribcage, sending wave after wave of icy, hot blood through her veins. She could feel the sting of the cut on her shoulder. first blood.
The werewolves began to stamp the earth again, though this time they weren't silent. There was muttering and gasping in the ranks. Maya did her best to block it out, ignore it. She saw Rufus step toward her. He was a shadow, outlined by moonlight. And in that moment she saw not just him, but also Sebastian, looming over her on the beach, a cold prince carved out of ice and blood.
Your boyfriend's dead.
Her fist clenched against the ground as Rufus threw himself at her, razor claws extended. She rose and flung her handful of dirt and grass into his face. He staggered back, choking and blinded. Maya stepped forward and slammed her boot down on his foot. She felt the small bone shatter, heard him scream. In that moment, when he was distracted, she jammed her claws into his eyes. A scream ripped from his throat, quickly cut off. He slumped backwards, collapsing onto the grass with a loud crash that made her think of a tree falling. She looked down at her hand. It was covered in blood and smears of liquid, brain matter and vitreous humor. She dropped to her knees and threw up in the grass. Her claws slid back in and she wiped her hands on the ground, over and over as her stomach spasmed. She felt a hand on her back and looked up to see Leela leaning over her. Maya, she said softly, but her voice was drowned out by the pack chanting the name of their new leader.
Maya, Maya, Maya!
Leela's eyes were dark and concerned. Maya rose to her feet, wiping her mouth on the sleeve of her jacket, and hurried across the grass to Bat. She bent down beside him and touched her hand to his cheek.
Bat? She said.
With an effort, he opened his eyes. There was blood on his mouth, but he was breathing steadily. Maya guessed he was already healing from Rufus's blows.
I didn't know you fought dirty, he said with a half-smile.
Maya thought of Sebastian and his glittering grin and the bodies on the beach. She thought of what Lily had told her. She thought of the shadow hunters behind their wards and of the fragility of the Accords and Council.
It's going to be a dirty war, she thought, but that wasn't what she said out loud.
I didn't know your name was Bartholomew. She picked up his hand, held it in her own bloody one. All around them the pack was still chanting, Maya, Maya, Maya. He closed his eyes.
Everyone's got their secrets.
It almost doesn't seem to make a difference, said Jace, curled into the window seat in his and Alec's attic room.
It all feels like prison.
Do you think that's a side effect of the fact that armed guards are standing all around the house? Simon suggested.
I mean, just a thought.
Jace shot him an irritable look.
What is it about mundanes and their overwhelming compulsion to state the obvious? He asked.
He leaned forward, staring through the panes of the window. Simon might have been exaggerating slightly, but only slightly. The dark figures standing at cardinal points surrounding the Inquisitor's house might have been invisible to the untrained eye, but not to Jace's.
I'm not a mundane, Simon said, an edge to his voice.
And what is it about shadow hunters and their overwhelming compulsion to get themselves and everyone they care about killed?
Stop arguing!
Alec had been leaning against the wall, in classical thinking pose, with his chin propped on his hand. The guards are there to protect us, not keep us in. Have some perspective.
Alec, you've known me for several years, said Jace. When have I ever had perspective?
Alec glowered at him.
Are you still mad because I broke your phone?
Jace said.
Because you broke my wrist, so I'd say we're even.
It was sprained, Alec said. Not broken, sprained.
Now who's arguing? Said Simon.
Don't talk, Alec gestured at him with an expression of vague disgust. Every time I look at you, I keep remembering coming in here and seeing you draped all over my sister.
Jace sat up. I didn't hear about this.
Oh, come on, said Simon.
Simon, you're blushing, observed Jace. And you're a vampire and almost never blush, so this better be really juicy and weird. Were bicycles involved in some kinky way, vacuum cleaners, umbrellas?
Big umbrellas or the little kind you get with drinks? Alec asked.
Does it matter?
Jace began, and then broke off as Clary came into the room with Isabel, holding a small girl by the hand. After a moment of shocked silence, Jace recognized her. Emma, the girl whom Clary had run off to comfort during the council meeting. The one who'd looked at him with barely concealed hero worship. Not that he minded hero worship, but it was a bit odd to have a child dropped suddenly in the middle of what had admittedly begun to be a somewhat awkward conversation. "Clary," he said, "did you kidnap Emma Carstairs?" Clary gave him an exasperated look.
"No, she got here on her own." "I came in through one of the windows," Emma supplied helpfully, "like in Peter Pan."
Alex started to protest. Clary held her free hand up to stop him. Her other hand was now on Emma's shoulder.
"Everyone just be quiet for a second, okay?" Clary said. "She's not supposed to be here, yeah, but she came for a reason. She has information."
"That's right," Emma said in her small, determined voice. She was actually only about a head shorter than Clary, but then Clary was tiny. Emma would probably be tall one day. Jace tried to remember her father, John Carstairs. He was sure he'd seen him at council meetings, and thought he recalled a tall, fair-haired man. Or had his hair been dark? The Blackthorns he remembered, of course, but the Carstairs had faded out of his memory. Clary returned his sharp look with one that said, "Be nice." Jace closed his mouth. He'd never given much thought to whether he liked children or not, though he'd always liked playing with Max. Max had been surprisingly adept at strategy for such a little boy, and Jace had always liked setting him puzzles. The fact that Max had worshipped the ground he walked on hadn't hurt either. Jace thought of the wooden soldier he'd given to Max and closed his eyes in sudden pain. When he opened them again, Emma was looking at him. Not in the way she'd looked at him when he found her with Clary and the guard, the sort of startled, half-impressed, half-frightened, "You're Jace Lightwood" look, but with a little bit of worry. In fact, her whole posture was a mix of confidence that he was fairly sure she was faking, and clear fright. Her parents were dead, he thought, had died days ago. And he remembered a time 7 years before, when he'd faced the Lightwoods himself with the knowledge in his heart that his father had just died, and the bitter tang of the word orphan in his ears.
"Emma," he said as gently as he could, "how did you get into the window?"
"I climbed over the rooftops," she said, pointing out the window. "It wasn't that hard. Dormer windows are almost always bedrooms, so I climbed down to the first one, and it was Clary's."
She shrugged, as if what she'd done hadn't been either risky or impressive.
"It was mine, actually," said Isabel, who was looking at Emma as if she were a fascinating specimen.
Isabel sat down on the trunk at the foot of Alex's bed, stretching out her long legs. "Clary lives over at Luke's." Emma looked confused.
"I don't know where that is, and everyone was talking about all of you being here, that's why I came."
Alec looked down at Emma with the half-fond, half-worried look of a much older brother.
"Don't be afraid," he began.
"I'm not afraid," she snapped. "I came here because you need help."
Jace felt his mouth quirk up involuntarily at the corner.
"What kind of help?" he asked.
"I recognize that man today," she said. "The one who threatened the council? He came with Sebastian to attack the Institute." She swallowed. "That place he said we would all burn in? Edom..."
"It's another word for hell," said Alec. "Not a real place. You don't have to be worried."
"She's not worried, Alec," Clary said. "Just listen."
"It is a place," said Emma. "When they attacked the Institute, I heard them. I heard one of them say that they could take Mark to Edom and sacrifice him there. And when we escaped through the portal, I heard her calling after us that we'd burn in Edom, that there was no real escape." Her voice shook. "The way they talked about Edom, I know it was a real place, or a real place to them."
"Edom," said Clary, remembering. "Valentine called Lilith something like that. He called her My Lady of Edom."
Alec's eyes met Jace's. Alec nodded and slipped out of the room. Jace felt his shoulders relax minutely. In among the clamor of everything, it was good to have a Parabatai who knew what you were thinking without you having to say it.
"Have you told anyone else about this?"
Emma hesitated and then shook her head.
"Why not?" said Simon, who had been quiet until that moment.
Emma looked at him, blinking. She was only 12, Jace thought, and had probably barely encountered downworlders up close before.
"Why not tell the Clave?"
"Because I don't trust the Clave," said Emma in a small voice. "But I trust you."
Clary swallowed visibly.
"Emma, when we got here, the Clave questioned all of us, especially Jules, and they used the mortal sword to make sure we weren't lying. It hurts, but they didn't care. They used it on Ty and Livy. They used it on Drew."
Emma sounded outraged. They would probably have used it on Tavi if he could talk, and it hurts. The mortal sword hurts.
I know, Clary said quietly.
We've been staying with the Penhallows, Emma said, because of Aline and Helen, and because the Clave wants to keep an eye on us too, because of what we saw. I was downstairs when they came back from the funeral and I heard them talking, so I hid. A whole group of them, not just Patrick and Gia, but a lot of other Institute heads too. They were talking about what they should do, what the Clave should do, whether they should turn over Jason Clary to Sebastian as if it were their choice, their decision. But I thought it should be your decision. Some of them said it didn't matter whether you wanted to go or not.
Simon was on his feet.
But Jason Clary offered to go, practically begged to go.
We would have told them the truth. Emma pushed her tangled hair out of her face. Her eyes were enormous, brown, shot through with bits of gold and amber. They didn't have to use the mortal sword on us. We would have told the council the truth, but they used it anyway. They used it on Jules until his hands were burned from it.
Her voice shook.
So I thought you should know what they were saying. They don't want you to know it's not your choice because they know Clary can make portals. They know she can get out of here, and if she escapes, they think they'll have no way to bargain with Sebastian.
The door opened, and Alec came back into the room, carrying a book bound in brown leather. He was holding it in such a way as to obscure the title, but his eyes met Jace's, and he gave a slight nod, and then a glance towards Emma. Jace's heartbeat sped up. Alec had found something. Something he didn't like, judging from his grim expression. But something nonetheless.
Did the Clave members you overheard give any sense when they were going to decide what to do? Jace asked Emma, partly to distract her, as Alec sat down on the bed, sliding the book behind him. Emma shook her head.
They were still arguing when I left. I crawled out the top floor window. Jules told me not to because I'd get killed, but I knew I wouldn't. I'm a good climber, she added with a tinge of pride. And he worries too much.
It's good to have people worry about you, said Alec. It means they care. It's how you know they're good friends.
Emma's gaze went from Alec to Jace, curious.
Do you worry about him?
She asked Alec, surprising a laugh out of him.
All the time, he said. Jace could get himself killed putting his pants on in the morning. Being his parabatai is a full-time job.
I wish I had a parabatai, Emma said. It's like someone who's your family, but because they want to be, not because they have to be.
She flushed, suddenly self-conscious.
Anyway, I don't think anyone should be punished for saving people.
Is that why you trust us? Clary asked, touched. You think we save people?
Emma toed the carpet with her boots, then she looked up.
I knew about you, she said to Jace, blushing. I mean, everyone knows about you. That you were Valentine's son, but then you weren't, you were Jonathan Herondale. And I don't think that meant anything to most people, most of them called you Jace Lightwood. But it made a difference to my dad. I heard him say to my mom that he thought the Herondales were all gone, that the family was dead, but you were the last of them, and he voted in the council meeting for the Clave to keep looking for you, because he said, the Carstairs owe the Herondales.
Why? Alec said. What do they owe them for?
I don't know, Emma said. But I came because my dad would have wanted me to, even if it was dangerous.
Jace huffed a soft laugh. Something tells me you don't care if things are dangerous.
He crouched down, putting his eyes on a level with Emma's.
Is there anything you can tell us, anything else they said?
She shook her head. They don't know where Sebastian is. They don't know about the Edom thing. I mentioned it when I was holding the mortal sword. But I think they just thought it was another word for hell. They never asked me if I thought it was a real place, so I didn't say.
Thanks for telling us. It's a help, a huge help. You should go, he added as gently as he could, before they notice you're gone. But from now on, the Herondales owe the Carstairs, okay? Remember that.
Jace stood up as Emma turned to Clary, who nodded and led her over to the window where Jace had been sitting earlier. Clary bent down and hugged the younger girl before reaching over to unlatch a window. Emma clambered out with the agility of a monkey. She swung herself up until only her dangling boots were visible, and a moment later those were gone too. Jace heard a light scraping overhead as she darted across the roof tiles, and then silence.
I like her, Isabel said finally.
She kind of reminds me of Jace when he was little and stubborn and acted like he was immortal.
Two of those things still apply, said Clary, swinging the window shut. She sat down on the window seat.
I guess the big question is, do we tell Gia or anyone else on the council what Emma told us?
That depends, said Jace.
Gia has to bow to what the whole Clave wants. She said so herself. If they decide that what they want is to toss us into a cage until Sebastian comes for us, well, that pretty much squanders any upper hand this information might give us.
So it depends on if the information's actually useful or not, said Simon.
Right, said Jace.
Alec, what did you find out?
Alec pulled the book out from behind him. It was an Encyclopedia Demonica, the sort of book every Shadowhunter library would have. I thought Edom might be a name for one of the demon realms.
Well, everyone's been theorizing that Sebastian might be in a different dimension since he's untrackable, said Isabel. But the demon dimensions, there are millions of them, and people can't just go there.
Some are better known than others, said Alec. The Bible and the Enochian texts mention quite a few, disguised and subsumed, of course, into the stories and myths.
Edom is mentioned as a wasteland, he read out loud, his voice measured. And the streams of Edom shall be turned into pitch, and her soil into sulphur. Her land shall become burning pitch. Night and day it shall not be quenched. Its smoke shall go up forever. From generation to generation it shall lie waste. None shall pass through it forever and ever. He sighed.
And of course there's the legends about Lilith and Edom, that she was banished there, that she rules the place with the demon Asmodeus. That's probably why the Indarkand were talking about sacrificing Mark Blackthorn to her in Edom.
Lilith protects Sebastian, said Clary. If he was going to go to a demon realm, he'd go to hers.
None shall pass through it forever and ever doesn't sound very encouraging, said Jace. Besides, there's no way to get to the demon realms. Traveling from place to place in this world is one thing.
Well, there is a way, I think, said Alec. A pathway that the Nephilim can't close because it lies outside the jurisdiction of our laws. It's old, older than Shadowhunters, old, wild magic. He sighed. It's in the Seelie Court, and it's guarded by the Fair Folk. No human has set foot on that pathway in more than 100 years.
13. Paved with good intentions.
Jace was prowling the room like a cat. The others watched him, Simon with one eyebrow cocked.
There's no other way to get there, Jace asked. We can't try to portal.
We're not demons. We can portal only within a dimension, said Alec.
I know that, but if Clary experimented with the portal runes...
I won't do it, Clary interrupted, putting her hand protectively over the pocket where her steely rested. I won't put you all in danger. I portaled myself and Luke to Idris and nearly got us killed. I'm not risking it.
Jace was still prowling. It was what he did when he was thinking.
Clary knew that, but looked at him worriedly all the same. He was closing and unclosing his hands and murmuring under his breath. Finally, he stopped.
Clary, he said, you can make a portal to the Seelie Court, right?
Yes, she said. That I can do. I've been there, I remember it, but would we be safe? We haven't been invited and the Fair Folk don't like incursions into their territory.
There's no we, Jace said. None of you are coming. I'm going to do this alone.
Alec sprang to his feet.
I knew it. I bloody knew it. And absolutely not. Not a chance.
Jace cocked an eyebrow at him. He was outwardly calm, but Clary could see his tension in the set of his shoulders and the way he rocked forward slightly on the balls of his feet.
Since when do you say bloody?
Since the situation bloody warrants it. Alec crossed his arms over his chest. And I thought we were going to discuss telling the Clave.
We can't do that, Jace said. Not if we're going to get to the demons' realms through the Seelie Court. It's not like half the Clave can just pour into the court. That would seem like an act of war against the Fair Folk.
Whereas if it's just 5 of us, we can sweet-talk them into letting us through. Isabel raised an eyebrow.
We've parleyed with the Queen before, Jace said. You went to the Queen when Sebastian had me.
And she tricked us into taking walkie-talkie rings she could listen in on, Simon said.
I wouldn't trust her further than I could throw a medium-sized elephant.
I didn't say anything about trusting her. She'll do whatever's in her interest at the moment. We just have to make it her interest to let us have access to the road to Edom.
We're still shadow hunters, said Alec. Still representatives of the Clave. Whatever we do in Faerie, they'll answer for it.
So we'll use tact and cleverness, said Jace. Look, I'd love to make the Clave deal with the Queen and her court for us, but we don't have the time. They, Luke and Jocelyn and Magnus and Raphael, don't have the time.
Sebastian's gearing up. He's speeding up his plans, his bloodlust.
You don't know what he's like when he gets like this, but I do. I do.
He caught his breath. There was a thin sheen of sweat across his cheekbones.
Which is why I want to do this alone. Brother Zacharias said it to me. I am the heavenly fire. It's not like we can get another glorious. We can't exactly summon another angel. We played that card.
Fine, Clary said. But even if you're the only source of heavenly fire, that doesn't mean you need to do this alone.
She's right, Alec said.
We know that heavenly fire can hurt Sebastian, but we don't know it's the only thing that can hurt him. And it definitely doesn't mean you're the only one who can kill however many in Darkon Sebastian has standing around him, Clary pointed out. Or that you can get yourself through the Seelie Court safely on your own, or, after that, through some forsaken demon realm where you have to find Sebastian.
We can't track him because we're not in the same dimension, Jace said.
He held up his wrist where Sebastian's silver bracelet glittered.
Once I'm in his world, I can track him. I've done it before.
We can track him, Clary said. Jace, there's more to this than just finding him. This is huge, bigger than anything we've done. This isn't just about killing Sebastian. This is about the prisoners. It's a rescue mission. It's their lives on the line as well as ours. Her voice cracked.
Jace had paused his prowling. He looked from one of his friends to the other, almost pleading. I don't want anything to happen to you.
Yeah, well, none of us want anything to happen to us either, said Simon. But think ahead, what happens if you go and we stay? Sebastian wants Clary, wants her more than he wants you, and he can find her here in Alicante. Nothing's stopping him from coming again except a promise that he'll wait 2 days.
And what are his promises worth?
He could come for any of us at any time. He proved that with the Downworld representatives. We're sitting ducks here. Better to go where he isn't expecting or looking for us.
I will not hang back here in Alicante while Magnus is in danger, said Alec in a surprisingly cold adult voice.
Go without me, and you disrespect our Parabatai oaths, you disrespect me as a shadow hunter, and you disrespect the fact that this is my battle too.
Jace looked shocked. Alec, I would never disrespect our oaths. You're one of the best shadow hunters I know.
Which is why we come with you, said Isabel. You need us. You need Alec and me to back you up the way we always have. You need Clary's rune powers and Simon's vampire strength. This isn't just your fight. If you respect us as shadow hunters and as your friends, all of us, then we go with you. It's that simple.
I know, Jace said softly. I know I need you. He looked over at Clary, and she heard Isabel's voice saying,
You need Clary's rune powers, and remembered the first time she had ever seen him, Alec and Isabel on either side of him, and how she had thought he looked dangerous. It never occurred to her that she was like him, that she was dangerous too.
Thank you, he said, and cleared his throat. Okay, everyone get into gear and pack bags. Pack for overland travel, water, what food you can grab, extra steelies, blankets. And you, he said to Simon. You might not need food, but if you have bottled blood, bring it. There might not be anything you can eat where we're going.
There's always the four of you, Simon said, but he smiled a little, and Clary knew it was because Jace had included him among their number without a moment's hesitation. Finally, Jace had accepted that where they went, Simon went too, whether he was a shadow hunter or not.
All right, Alec said. Everyone meet back here in 10 minutes. Clary, get ready to create a portal, and Jace?
Yes?
You'd better have a strategy for what we're going to do when we get to the fairy court, because we're going to need it. The maelstrom inside the portal was almost a relief. Clary went last through the shining doorway, after the other four had stepped through,
and she let the cold darkness take her like water pulling her down and under, stealing the breath from her lungs, making her forget everything but the clamor and the falling. It was over too fast, the grip of the portal releasing her to fall awkwardly, her backpack twisted underneath her on the packed dirt floor of a tunnel. She caught her breath and rolled over, using a long dangling root to pull herself upright. Alec, Isabel, Jace, and Simon were picking themselves up around her, brushing off their clothes. It wasn't dirt they had fallen on, she realized, but a carpet of moss. More moss spread along the smooth brown tunnel walls, but it glowed with phosphorescent light. Small glowing flowers, like electric daisies, grew in among the moss, starring the green with white. Snaky roots dangled down from the roof of the tunnel, making Clary wonder what exactly was growing above ground. Various smaller tunnels branched off the main one, some of them too small to admit a human form. Isabel picked a piece of moss out of her hair and frowned. "Where are we exactly?" "I aimed for just outside the throne room," Clary said. "We've been here, it just always looks different." Jace had already moved down the main corridor. Even without the soundless rune, he was as quiet as a cat on the soft moss. The others followed, Clary with her hand on the hilt of her sword. She was a little surprised at how short a time it had taken to become used to a weapon hovering at her side. If she reached for Heroes Forest and found it not there, she thought, she would panic. "Here," Jace said softly, motioning the rest of them to be quiet. They were in an archway, a curtain separating them from a larger room beyond. The last time Clary had been here, the curtains had been made out of living butterflies, and their struggles had made it rustle. Today it was thorns, like the thorns that surrounded Sleeping Beauty's castle, thorns woven into one another so that they formed a dangling sheet. Clary could catch only glimpses of the room beyond, a glimmer of white and silver, but they could all hear the sound of laughing voices coming from the corridors around them. Glamour runes didn't work on the fair folk. There was no way to hide from the view. Jace was alert, his whole body tight. He carefully raised the dagger and parted the sheet of thorns as silently as he could. They all leaned in, staring. The room beyond was a winter fairyland, the kind Clary had rarely seen except in visits to Luke's farmhouse. The walls were sheets of white crystal, and the queen reclined upon her divan, which was white crystal to match, shot through with veins of silver in the rock. The floor was covered in snow and long icicles hung from the ceiling, each one bound around with ropes of gold and silver thorns. Bunches of white roses were piled around the room, scattered at the foot of the queen's divan, wound through her red hair like a crown. Her dress was white and silver too, as diaphanous as a sheet of ice. One could glimpse her body through it, though not clearly. Ice and roses and the queen. The effect was blinding. She was leaning back on her couch, her head tipped up, speaking to a heavily armored fairy knight. His armor was dark brown, the color of the trunk of a tree. One of his eyes was black, the other pale blue, almost white. For a moment, Clary thought he had the head of a deer tucked under his big arm. But as she looked closer, she realized it was a helmet, decorated with antlers.
"And how goes it with the wild hunt, Gwyn?"
the queen was asking. "The gatherers of the dead? I assume there were rich pickings for you at the Adamant Citadel the other night. I hear that the howls of the Nephilim tore the sky as they died." Clary felt the shadow hunters around her tense. She remembered lying beside Jace in a boat in Venice and watching the wild hunt go by overhead. A maelstrom of shouts and battle cries, horses whose hooves gleamed scarlet, hammering across the sky.
"So I have heard, my lady," Gwyn said in a voice so hoarse it was barely understandable. It sounded like the scrape of a blade against rough bark.
"The wild hunt comes when the ravens of the battlefield scream for blood. We gather our riders from among the dying, but we were not at the Adamant Citadel. The war games of Nephilim and Dark Ones are too rich for our blood. The fair folk mix poorly with demons and angels."
"You disappoint me, Gwyn," said the queen, pouting. "This is a time of power for the fair folk. We gain, we rise, we achieve the world. We belong on the chessboards of power as much as Nephilim do. I had hoped for your advice."
"Forgive me, lady," said Gwyn. "Chess is too delicate a game for us. I cannot advise you." But I gave you such a gift, the queen sulked. The Blackthorn Boy, Shadow Hunter and Fairy Blood together, it is rare. He will ride at your back and demons will fear you. A gift from myself and from Sebastian. Sebastian, she said it comfortably, familiarly. There was a fondness in her voice, if the Queen of Fairies could be said to be fond. Clary could hear Jace's breathing beside her, sharp and quick. The others were tense as well, panic chasing realization across their faces as the Queen's words sank in. Clary felt Hiers Forest grow cold in the grip of her hand. A path to the demon realms that leads through fairy lands, the earth cracking open under Sebastian's feet, Sebastian bragging that he had allies. The Queen and Sebastian giving the gift of a captured Nephilim child, together. Demons already fear me, beautiful one, said Gwyn, and he smiled. My beautiful one. The blood in Clary's veins was an icy river, singing down into her heart. Glancing down, she saw Simon move to cover Isabel's hand with his, a quick, reassuring gesture. Isabel had gone white and looked sick, as did Alec and Jace. Simon swallowed, the gold ring on his finger glittered, and she heard Sebastian's voice in her head. Do you really think she'd let you get your hands on something that would let you communicate with your little friends without her being able to listen in? Since I took it from you, I've spoken to her. She's spoken to me. You were a fool to trust her, little sister. She likes to be on the winning side of things, the Seelie Queen. And that side will be ours, Clary. Ours.
You owe me one favor then, Gwyn, in exchange for the boy, said the queen. I know that the Wild Hunt serves its own laws, but I would request your presence at the next battle. Gwyn frowned. I am not sure one boy is worth such a weighty promise. As I have said, the hunt has small desire to involve itself in the business of the Nephilim. You need not fight, said the queen, in a voice like silk. I would ask only your assistance with the bodies afterward. And there will be bodies. The Nephilim will pay for their crimes, Gwyn. Everyone must pay.
Before Gwyn could reply, another figure strode into the room from the dark tunnel that curved away behind the queen's throne. It was Melion, in his white armor, his black hair in a braid down his back. His boots were encrusted with what looked like blackish tar. He frowned when he saw Gwyn. A hunter never brings good tidings, he said.
Subside, Melion, said the queen. Gwyn and I were only discussing an exchange of favors.
Melion inclined his head. I bear news, my lady, but I would have counsel with you in private. She turned to Gwyn.
Are we agreed?
Gwyn hesitated, then nodded curtly, and with a glance of dislike in Melion's direction, disappeared down the dark tunnel from which the fairy knight had come. The queen slid down in her divan, her pale fingers like marble against her gown.
Very well, Melion. What do you wish to speak of? Is it news of the Downworld prisoners?
The Downworld prisoners. Clary heard Alec's sharp intake of breath behind her, and Melion's head whipped to the side. She saw his eyes narrow.
If I do not mistake myself, he said, reaching for the blade at his side. My lady, we have visitors.
Jace was already sliding his hand down his side, whispering, Gabriel. The Seraph blade blazed up, and Isabel leapt to her feet, sweeping her whip forward, slicing through the curtain of thorns, which collapsed, rattling to the ground. Jace darted past the thorns and advanced into the throne room, Gabriel blazing in his hand. Clary whipped her sword free. They poured into the room, arranging themselves in an arc behind Jace. Alec with his bow already strung, Isabel with her whip out and glittering. Clary with her sword and Simon. Simon had no better weapon than his own self, but he stood and smiled at Melion, and his teeth glittered. The queen drew herself upright with a hiss, quickly covered. It was the only time Clary had seen her flustered.
How dare you enter the court unbidden, she demanded. This is the highest of crimes, a breaking of covenant law.
How dare you speak of breaking covenant law? Jace shouted, and the Seraph blade burned in his hand. Clary thought Jonathan Shadowhunter must have looked like that so many centuries ago when he drove the demons back and saved an unknowing world from destruction. You who have murdered and lied and taken Downworlders of the Council prisoner, you have allied yourself with evil forces and you will pay for it. The Queen of the Seelie Court does not pay, said the Queen.
Everyone pays, Jace said, and suddenly he was standing on the divan, over the Queen, and the tip of his blade was against her throat. She flinched back, but she was pinned in place. Jace standing over her, his feet braced on the couch.
How did you do it? He demanded. Melion swore that you were on the side of the Nephilim. Fairies can't lie. That's why the council trusted you.
Melion is half fairy. He can lie, said the Queen, shooting an amused glance at Isabel, who looked shocked.
Only the Queen could look amused with a blade to her throat, Clary thought.
Sometimes the simplest answer is the correct one, Shadowhunter.
That's why you wanted him on the council, said Clary, remembering the favor the Queen had asked of her what seemed so long ago now.
Because he can lie. A betrayal long planned. Jace was breathing hard. I should cut your throat right now.
You would not dare, said the Queen, unmoving, the point of the sword against her throat. If you touch the Queen of the Seelie Court, the fair folk will be ranged against you for all time.
Jace was breathing hard as he spoke. His face was full of burning light.
Then what are you now? He demanded.
We heard you. You spoke of Sebastian as an ally. The Adamant Citadel lies on ley lines. Ley lines are the province of the Fae. You led him there. You opened the way. You let him ambush us. How are you not already ranged against us?
An ugly look crossed Melion's face. You may have heard us speaking, little Nephilim, he said. But if we kill you before you return to the Clave to tell your tales, none others need ever know.
The knight started forward. Alec let an arrow fly and it plunged into Melion's leg. The knight toppled backward with a cry. Alec strode forward, already notching another arrow to his bow. Melion was on the ground, moaning, the snow around him turning red. Alec stood over him, bow at the ready.
Tell us how to get Magnus, how to get the prisoners back, he said. Do it, or I'll turn you into a pincushion.
Melion spat. His white armor seemed to blend into the snow around him.
I will tell you nothing, he said. Torture me, kill me, I shall not betray my queen.
It doesn't matter what he says anyway, said Isabel. He can lie, remember?
Alec's face shut.
True, he said.
Die then, liar.
And he let the next arrow go. It sank into Melion's chest and the fairy knight fell back, the force of the arrow sending his body skidding back across the snow. His head hit the cave wall with a wet smack. The Queen cried out. The sound pierced Clary's ears, snapping her out of her shock. She could hear the sound of fairies shouting, running feet in the corridors outside.
Simon! She yelled and he whirled around. Come here!
She jabbed Heosphorus back into her belt, seized her steely, and darted toward the main door, now denuded of its ragged curtain of thorns. Simon was at her heels.
Lift me, she panted, and without asking, he put his hands around her waist and thrust her upward, his vampire strength nearly sending her hurtling to the roof.
She grabbed on tight to the top of the archway with her free hand and looked down. Simon was staring up at her, obviously puzzled, but his grip on her was steady.
Hold on, she said, and began to draw.
It was the opposite of the rune she'd drawn on Valentine's boat. This was a rune for shutting and locking, for closing away all things, for hiding and safety. Black lines spread from the tip of her steely as she drew, and she heard Simon say, "Hurry up, they're coming," just as she finished and drew the steely back. The ground underneath them jerked. They fell together, Clary landing on Simon. Not the most comfortable landing, he was all knees and elbows, and rolling to the side as a wall of earth began to slide across the open archway like a theater curtain being drawn. There were shadows rushing toward the door, shadows that began to take the shape of running fairy folk. And Simon jerked Clary upright just as the doorway that opened onto the corridor disappeared with a final rumble, shutting away the fairies on the other side.
By the angel, Isabel said in an awed voice.
Clary turned around, steely in hand. Jace was on his feet, the Seelie Queen in front of him, his sword pointed at her heart. Alec stood over Melion's corpse. He was expressionless as he looked at Clary, and then at his parabatai. Behind him opened the passageway through which Melion had come and Gwyn had gone.
"Are you going to close the back tunnel?" Simon asked Clary.
She shook her head.
"Melion had pitch on his shoes," she said.
"And the streams of Edom shall be turned into pitch, remember?"
I think he came from the demon realms.
I think they're that way.
Jace, Alec said, tell the queen what we want and that if she does it, we will let her live. The queen laughed a shrill sound.
Little archer boy, she said, I underestimated you.
Sharp are the arrows of a broken heart. Alec's face tightened. You underestimated all of us, you always have. You and your arrogance. The fair folk are an old people, a good people. You aren't fit to lead them. Under your rule, they will all wind up like this, he said, jerking his chin towards Melion's corpse.
You are the one who killed him, said the queen, not I.
Everyone pays, Alec said, and his eyes on her were steady and blue and hard.
We desire the safe return of the hostages Sebastian Morgenstern has taken, said Jace.
The queen spread her hands.
They are not in this world, nor here in Faerie, nor in any land over which I have jurisdiction. There is nothing I can do to help you rescue them, nothing at all.
Very well, said Jace, and Clary had the feeling he had expected that response.
There is one thing you can do, one thing you can show us that will make me spare you.
The queen went still.
What is that, Shadowhunter?
The road to the demon realm of Edom, said Jace. We want safe passage to it. We will walk it and walk our way out of your kingdom.
To Clary's surprise, the queen seemed to relax. The tension bled from her posture and a small smile tugged at the corner of her mouth, a smile that Clary did not like.
Very well. I will lead you to the road to the demon realm.
The queen lifted her diaphanous dress in her hand so that she could make her way down the steps that surrounded her divan. Her feet were bare and as white as the snow. She began to make her way across the room to the dark passage that stretched away behind her throne. Alec fell into step behind Jace, and Isabel behind him. Clary and Simon made up the rear, a strange procession.
I really, really hate to say this, Simon said in a low voice, as they went out from the throne room and into the shadowed darkness of the underground passage. But that kind of seemed too easy.
That wasn't easy, Clary whispered back.
I know, but the queen, she's clever. She could have found a way out of doing this if she wanted to. She doesn't have to let us go to the demon realms.
But she does want to, Clary said. She thinks we'll die there.
Simon shot her a sideways look.
Will we?
I don't know,
Clary said, and sped up her pace to catch up with the others. The corridor wasn't as long as Clary had thought. Its darkness had made the distance seem impossible, but they had only been walking for a half hour or so when they broke out from the shadows and into a larger, lighted space. They had been walking in silence and darkness, Clary lost in her thoughts, memories of the house she and Sebastian had shared, the sound of the wild hunt roaring across the sky, of that piece of paper with the words, "My Beautiful One," on it. That hadn't been romance, that had been respect. The Seelie Queen, the beautiful one.
The queen likes to be on the winning side of things, Clary, and that side will be ours, Sebastian had said to her once. Even when she had reported that to the Clave, she had taken it as part of his bluster.
She had believed, along with the council, that the fair folk's word that they were loyal was enough, that the queen would at least wait to see which way the wind blew before she broke any alliances. She thought of the catch in Jace's breath when he'd said, a betrayal long planned. Maybe none of them had considered it because they hadn't been able to bear considering it. That the queen would be so sure of Sebastian's eventual victory that she would hide him in Faerie, where he could not be tracked. That she would help him in battle. Clary thought of the earth opening at the Adamant Citadel, and taking Sebastian and the Indarkin down into it. That had been Faerie magic. The courts lay underground, after all. Why else had the Dark Shadow Hunters who had attacked the Los Angeles Institute taken Mark Blackthorne? Everyone had assumed Sebastian was afraid of the vengeance of the fair folk, but he wasn't. He was in league with them. He had taken Mark because he had fairy blood, and because of that blood, they thought Mark belonged to them. In all her life, she had never thought so much as she had in the past 6 months about blood and what it meant. Nephilim blood bred true. She was a shadow hunter. Angel blood, it made her what she was, gifted her with the power of runes. It made Jace what he was, made him strong and fast and brilliant. Morgenstern blood, she had it, and so did Sebastian, and that was why he cared about her at all. It gave her a dark heart, too. Or did it?
Was it Sebastian's blood, Morgenstern and demon mix, that made him a monster? Or could he have been changed, fixed, made better, taught otherwise, as the Lightwoods had taught Jace?
Here we are, said the Seelie Queen, and her voice was amused. Can you guess the right road?
They stood in a massive cave, the roof lost in shadow. The walls glowed with a phosphorescent shine, and four roads branched off from where they stood, the one behind them and three others. One was clear and broad and smooth, leading directly ahead of them. The one on the left shone with green leaves and bright flowers, and Clary thought she saw the glimmer of blue sky in the distance. Her heart longed to go that way. And the last way, the darkest, was a narrow tunnel, the entrance wound about with spiked metal and thorn bushes lining the sides. Clary thought she could see darkness and stars at the end. Alec laughed shortly.
We're shadow hunters, he said. We know the old tales. This is the three roads.
At Clary's puzzled look, he said, fairies don't like their secrets to get out, but sometimes human musicians have been able to encode fairy secrets into ancient ballads. There's one called Thomas the Rhymer, about a man who was kidnapped by the Queen of Fairy.
Hardly kidnapped, objected the Queen. He came quite willingly.
And she took him to a place where three roads lay and told him that one went to heaven, and one went to fairyland, and one went to hell. And see ye not that narrow road, so thick beset with thorns and briars? That is the path of righteousness, though after it but few inquires. Alec pointed toward the narrow tunnel.
It goes to the mundane world, said the Queen sweetly. Your folk find it heavenly enough there.
That's how Sebastian got to the Adamant Citadel and had warriors backing him up that the Clave couldn't see, said Jason, disgusted. He used this tunnel. He had warriors hanging back here in Faerie where they couldn't be tracked. They came through when he needed them. He gave the Queen a dark look. Many Nephilim are dead because of you.
Mortals, said the Queen. They die.
Alec ignored her.
There, he said, pointing to the leafy tunnel.
That goes farther into Faerie. And that, he pointed ahead, is the road to hell. That's where we're going. I always heard it was paved with good intentions, said Simon.
Place your feet upon the way and find out, Daylighter, said the Queen.
Jace twisted the tip of the blade in her back. What will stop you from telling Sebastian we've come after him the moment we leave you? The Queen made no noise of pain, only her lips thinned. She looked old in that moment, despite the youth and beauty of her face.
You ask a fine question, and even if you kill me, there are those in my court who will speak to him of you, and he will guess your intentions, for he is clever. You cannot evade his knowing, save you kill all the fair folk in my court.
Jace paused. He held the seraph blade in his hand, the tip pressed up against the Seelie Queen's back. Its light flared up onto his face, carving out its beauty in peaks and valleys, the sharpness of cheekbones and the angle of jaw. It caught the tips of his hair and lit them with fire, as if he were wearing a crown of burning thorns. Clary watched him, and others did as well, silently, giving him their trust. Whatever decision he made, they would stand behind it.
Come now, said the Queen. You do not have the stomach for so much killing. You were always Valentine's gentlest child.
Her eyes lingered a moment on Clary, gleeful. You have a dark heart in you, Valentine's daughter. Swear, said Jace. I know what promises mean to your people. I know you cannot lie. Swear you will say nothing of us to Sebastian, nor will you allow anyone in your court to do the same.
I swear, said the Queen. I swear that no one in my court, by word or deed, will tell him that you came here.
Jace stepped away from the Queen, lowering his blade to his side. I know you think you are sending us to our deaths, he said, but we will not die so easily. We will not lose this war, and when we are victorious, we shall make you and your people bleed for what you have done.
The Queen's smile left her face.
They turned away from her and started down the path to Edom, silently. Clary looked over her shoulder once as they went, and saw only the outline of the Queen, motionless, watching them go, her eyes burning. The corridor curved far away into the distance, seeming as if it had been hollowed out of the rock around it by fire.
As the five of them went forward, moving in total silence, the pale stone walls around them darkened, stained here and there by streaks of charcoal blackness, as if the rock itself had burned. The smooth floor began to give way to a rockier one, grit crunching under their boot heels. The phosphorescence in the walls started to dim, and Alec drew his witchlight from his pocket and raised it overhead. As the light rayed out from between his fingers, Clary felt Simon beside her stiffen.
"What is it?" she whispered.
"Something's moving."
He jabbed a finger in the direction of the shadows ahead.
"Up there."
Clary squinted but saw nothing. Simon's vampire eyesight was better even than a shadow hunter's. As quietly as she could, she drew his forest from her belt and paced a few steps ahead, keeping to the shadows at the sides of the tunnel. Jason and Alec were deep in conversation. Clary tapped Izzy on the shoulder and whispered to her.
"There's someone here, or something."
Isabel didn't reply, only turned to her brother and made a gesture at him, a complicated movement of fingers. Alec's eyes showed his comprehension, and he turned immediately to Jace. Clary remembered the first time she'd seen the three of them, in pandemonium, years of practice melding them into a unit that thought together, moved together, breathed together, fought together. She couldn't help but wonder if, no matter what happened, no matter how dedicated a Shadowhunter she became, she would always be on the fringes. Alec swung his hand down suddenly, dousing the light. A flash and a spark, and Isabel was gone from Clary's side. Clary spun around, holding his force, and heard the sound of a scuffle, a thump, and then a very human yelp of pain. "Stop!" Simon called, and light exploded all around them. It was as if a camera flash had gone off. It took a moment for her eyes to adjust to the new brightness. The scene filled in slowly. Jace holding his witchlight, the glow radiating around him like the light of a small sun. Alec, his bow raised and notched. Isabel, the handle of her whip, tight in one hand, the whip itself curled around the ankles of a slight figure hunched against the cave wall. A boy, with pale blonde hair that curled over his slightly pointed ears.
"Oh my God," Clary whispered, shoving her weapon back into her belt and pressing forward.
"Isabel, stop, it's all right," she said, moving toward the boy. His clothes were torn and dirty, his feet bare and black with filth. His arms were bare too, and on them were the marks of runes. Shadowhunter runes.
"By the angel!"
Izzy's whip slithered back into her grasp. Alec's bow fell to his side. The boy lifted his head and scowled.
"You're a shadowhunter," said Jason in an incredulous tone.
The boy scowled again, more ferociously. There was anger in his look, but more than that, there was grief and fear. There was no doubting who he was. He had the same fine features as his sister, the same angled chin and hair like bleached wheat curling at the tips. He was about 16, Clary remembered. He looked younger.
"It's Mark Blackthorne," Clary said.
"Helen's brother, look at his face, look at his hand." For a moment, Mark looked confused. Clary touched her own ring finger and his eyes lit with comprehension. He held out his thin right hand. On the fourth finger, the family ring of the Blackthorns, with its design of intertwined thorns, glittered.
"How did you get here?" Jace said. "How did you know how to find us?"
"I was with the hunters underground," Mark said in a low voice. "I heard Gwyn talking to some of the others about how you'd shown up in the Queen's chamber. I sneaked away from the hunters. They weren't paying attention to me. I was looking for you and I ended up here."
He gestured to the tunnel around them.
"I had to talk to you. I had to know about my family."
His face was in shadow, but Clary saw his features tighten.
"The fairies told me they were all dead. Is it true?"
There was a shocked silence, and Clary read the panic in Mark's expression as his eyes darted from Isabel's downcast eyes to Jace's blank expression to Alec's tight posture.
"It's true," Mark said then. "Isn't it? My family. Your father was turned. But your brothers and sisters are alive," Clary said. "They're in Idris. They escaped. They're fine."
If she had expected Mark to look relieved, she was disappointed. He went white.
"What?"
"Julian, Helen, the others, they're all alive."
Clary put her hand on his shoulder. He flinched away.
"They're alive and they're worried about you."
"Clary,"
Jay said, a warning in his voice. Clary shot a look over at him. Surely telling Mark his siblings were alive was the most important thing.
Have you eaten anything, drunk anything since the fair folk took you? Jace asked, moving to peer into Mark's face. Mark jerked away, but not before Clary heard Jace's sharp intake of breath.
What is it? Isabel demanded.
His eyes, Jace